your source for everything paranormal.
Para-X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Merry meet and merry part, bright the cheeks and warm the heart. For tread the circle thrice about, to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet everybody, and welcome to another hour of Cauldron Stirring. Now, tonight we're going to be talking with Sally Groh. She's the author of a new book called Spirit Speaker. She's a psychic medium, who worked for over 30 years as a seer. Her passion for the psychic arts has led her to become an intuitive healer, an educator, and author. She's a compassionate and dedicated healer who helps connect us with our own spirit, as well as those of our beloved dead and sacred planet. Questions and comments, as you guys know, are always welcome. And if you're in the chat, Para-X chat room, that is, you can send me a private message. And if you're not here but would like to be here, come over to paraxradionetwork.com. Hi, Sally, and thanks for coming back for another visit.
Thanks for having me, Marla. I'm glad to be here and talking about Spirit Speaker.
Yes, it's a medium's guide to death and dying and what happens after death. And in the book, you answer most of the questions that people are asking you all the time. And I think, you know, fear of the unknown is the greatest fear to overcome. And the notion that we will all face death, whether it be with a loved one or one day us, you know, it's the five W's, you know, the who, what, where, when, and why that makes it even worse. But some people might think that this book is a book of sorrow and mourning, but it's actually a book of hope and healing, isn't it?
It is. I have a very close and personal relationship with the spirit world, and I think that when we can find our way to that place, having more of an understanding of what happens after death and how spirits communicate with us, or even having our own experiences personally or through a medium, that we begin to find that we can develop a living relationship with our beloved dead.
Well, you know, the book covers a whole bunch of different things like ancestors and guides, time, space, and perception, sitting with the dead, dying, death, the spirit world, and healing the dead. And, you know, we're going to try and beat the clock here and cover about at least something from each chapter. And I would like to start off with signs and signals, because in the book you say that spirits are always trying to communicate with us, but I've heard so many times about people who've lost loved ones, and they say they never, ever get any signs or any kind of communication attempts. What are we missing?
So, first of all, I tell people that spirit communication, while we all have the ability to perceive our dead or to receive messages from our dead, that doesn't mean that we're all going to have the same level of ability. It's kind of like art. We can all do art, but not all of us are going to have the skill or the talent to become artists, which means that spirit communication is not something that's an equal allotment for all people. And the symbols that people often receive are often overlooked because we have a lot of self-doubt around this. So I tell people that if they take out the words maybe, kind of, and think so, out of some of the experiences that they have, they would start having more experiences with spirit, because it's their own walls of doubt that come from, you know, religious dogma and fear from, you know, whatever. And sorrow, you know, sorrow can be a great blocker to our ability to perceive the messages from our loved one, because it can harden our aura and our perception.
Some people, yeah, you're true. When you say that, you know, people get blocked on their self-care, so they don't have self-confidence. But sometimes the signs are very subtle. You know, maybe you think, okay, so my great grandfather was known for smoking cigars, you know, so I'm going to smell cigars and they'll know it's him. But he might come in a different way. So maybe those preconceived notions are getting in the way too, maybe.
It's true. And it's also, the preconceived notions is something I talk about a lot. Like, you can't hold out for that one special sign that your mom is going to give you a rose every time that she was around you in some way, and then you're ignoring all the dimes you find, or how, you know, you feel her with you when a song comes on the radio that was special to her. You know, the other thing to know is that spirit communication isn't all equal on the side of spirit either. There are spirits who are excellent communicators. There are also spirits that are hard to communicate with. That's why if you ever watch a medium performing, you know, they will get really deep and detailed messages for one person. And the next person, they might get, you know, clear messages, but they're not as intricate. And it has to do with the spirit's ability to communicate as well.
Are they, silly question maybe, but is there a gag order on what spirit can share with us if we, you know, you ask certain questions maybe we're not supposed to know?
I think so. Maybe it's outside of our perception, because, you know, I've been communicating with spirit in some level my whole life. I've been aware of them, but I've been doing it on a deep, you know, like personal professional level for 20 years. And I know a lot about what happens when we die, but I don't know everything. And I tell people, I've never met a spirit that's been to heaven. I've never met a spirit that's been to hell. And I don't really believe in hell. I do believe that there is probably a higher realm of consciousness, but I think we have a lot more, you know, turns around the wheel, if you will, before we get there. I firmly believe in reincarnation, and that's my belief, you know, and it's also what I have for knowledge from my experience as a professional medium.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask you about heaven and hell, because, mm-hmm. you know, people have so many people have different ideas of what heaven is, or the Summerland, or the other side, you know.
Yep.
And some people say that you can create your own when you get on that.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I experience is that some spirits are really attached to certain places, not just like in a physical haunting kind of way, but like when you communicate with them, they're always in their office, and you can see, as a medium, you can see you're brought into their space. They have this, but then there's other spirits who don't like to be in physical form much at all. They're moving through their memories, or that they feel comfortable slipping more into the collective consciousness, if you will. There are, you know, I'm sure spirits that are in their own version of heaven or hell that comes out of, you know, having to look at their life, and also, like you said, with their beliefs and what that can look like. You know, it's kind of like people who do journey work or enter the astral realm regularly, whether through lucid dreaming or through, you know, doing guided meditation journey work of any kind. You know, in some ways, some of us have very vivid experiences there. And some of us have just a feeling of calm and peace and not much of a, you know, descriptive experience.
So we'll get what we think we're going to get, you know, that
we all have to review our life. We mm-hmm. all have to spend time looking over our life and how, you know, the different actions we took in our life and how they affected ourselves and other people. You know, particularly looking, I think of it like looking at where something went wrong. So that, because we're, it's kind of like, well, where did we make a mistake in this? Where did we actually gain most of our damage? Or where did we really make the right choice? You know, being able to look at those from both sides, being able to perceive it and see how much everybody really cares about us, feels about us, all of those kind of things.
And some of us are open-minded more than other people. I mean, some people think they're open-minded, but they've got blinders on at the same time.
Yeah.
And then other people are just going to take anything that comes just because they can, you know. So that, I guess, makes a difference too.
Well, I also find that a person who's highly spiritual, usually no matter what it is in some ways, like I've communicated with many, many, you know, like Catholic grandmothers. And that might seem surprising. I mean, I live in an area where there's a lot of French Canadians and a lot of people who are Catholic. But there's a lot of, you know, really religious grandmas who, you know, did the rosary all the time and went to mass and all that kind of stuff. And it can be surprising to some people that they could be so easily communicated with. And I'm like, but no, really, they absolutely believed in an afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And they also believed in communicating with spirit. They might have been praying to saints and, you know, things like that, but they already yeah. were opening that vessel for themselves in a form.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there are people that don't want to do this. They don't want to contact anybody. They just want to keep living their life and, you know, seeing what's going to happen later on. And yeah. some people get adventurous and say, okay, bring it on, you know. And that makes it good. Now, in as far as connecting with them, you know, you've talked about ancestor altars, and I've talked about that on my show several times. Do homes with ancestor altars make it easier to communicate with those on the other side, or easier for people to see the signs?
I think that an ancestor altar works like a tombstone or a gravestone. Like, we think of going to the graveyard. When we go into that space, we set aside sacred time to be with our beloved dead. We are making a purposeful effort to focus on that connection. And when we put an ancestor altar up in our house, we start interacting with it regularly, and we start making that understanding of talking to that person easier for ourselves, and that helps us to relax a little bit more, and it does make it easier for us to start seeing the signs more. And you know, you can tell stories about your beloved dead, you can, you know, create an altar or shrine that helps you to really focus on them, and that spending time with it every day. I usually recommend that people have like a tea light candle, and that they spend, you know, like 5 minutes every day just kind of having a conversation with the ones that they've lost, being open to the experience and making sure that whatever they receive for thoughts or input, that they try to keep the words maybe, kind of, and think so out of their mind so that they're not doubting what they receive. So if they go, oh, I think I smelled lilacs, you know, instead they say, I smelled lilacs. Okay. So as soon as I take the word think out of it, I'm stopping the doubt. And when I do that, I'm going to feel whether it's true or not. So one of the things that I tell my students is, I'm like, okay, if you say, I saw something out of the corner of my eye, and or I think I saw my grandmother out of the corner of my eye, you immediately are telling yourself that you don't believe yourself. But if instead you say, I saw something out of the corner of my eye, you're going to feel it. And when I ask this of people to repeat it in the affirmative, I said, well, how does that feel for you? And then they answer with, I saw something out of the corner of my eye. They recognized by saying it that it did feel right, that they did have that experience. Mm-hmm. So that changes perception a lot for people, that ability to just say, I'm going to choose to believe in my experience.
Mm-hmm. You know, that doubt is just so negative for about everything. And, you know, it's hard to get rid of, though. You know, we have trouble trusting ourselves here and there. But let me go one more thing about the altar. It's like I have my dad's tie clip, my great-grandmother's hairpin, and my grandfather's shot glass, which I fill up on his birthday every year because he used to have a shot every night before dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of offerings, I mean, to me, that's an offering, and the people that, I mean, the things that I have that belong to them is an offering, but what kind of offerings should we use?
I think that the things you are using, Marla, are really great items, okay? And I tell people that, you know, yes, items that are of memorabilia, pictures of our beloved dead, maybe sacred symbols that were important to them or to you. You can put crystals on it if it feels like something that you feel moved to do. Sometimes if your family's been in the military, you might put flags or some kind of medal. If your grandma was really a person who was associated with the kitchen, you may put like a wooden spoon on your altar. You can also choose by what type of family you have, what room you think that your family altar should go in, your ancestor altar should go in, because if your family was the kind that all gathered in the kitchen, then your altar should go in your kitchen if it can as well. And if you're the family that all gathered in the living room watching, you know, the game or whatever it is you were doing, putting your altar in the places that you naturally congregate helps to include your family in your spirit family in that relationship with your family. But stories and songs, especially stories about them, they love to be remembered. They mm-hmm. want to be talked about. My grandchildren know who my great grandmother is.
Wow.
Not because they've ever met her, but because I've talked about her so much that they know who Grammy Brown is, and they know stories of Grammy Brown. And, you know, it is a part of their who they are.
You mm-hmm. know?
And when we start having those relationships with our ancestors, that's the natural way of things. It's only been really in the last, you know, since the 1950s that we really started disconnecting from our ancestral ways of interacting with the dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's just really comfortable to have it there. And people say, well, you know, it's difficult to put up an altar. You know, it doesn't have to be elaborate. I have mine on my bookcase shelf.
Yep.
Because that's the only place that cat can't get it. You know, I mean, you do it for various reasons.
Right.
But, you know, even if it's a candle and a picture or something like that, you know. But somebody else was talking about if you have pictures of the deceased, sometimes you're in the picture, and they say never put yourself in a picture with them on an altar. What do you think?
Oh, I don't think that to myself has ever been something that I've heard. That might be part of a particular cultural belief system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't ever say that somebody is really wrong, because there might be something that makes sense to their personal belief system, but I think it's fine to have a picture of yourself. But if you, there's a couple different ways that you can have an ancestor altar. One is a shrine that is dedicated to a particular person. You know, that's usually something that we do when we're deeply in grieving. You know, if we've lost our partner or a child, or that our parent, and it was really still in that raw stage. And then there is the bigger ancestor altar that, you know, could include the one that you're deeply grieving, but the you know, but can have a lot more people stuff, like what you have, Marlo, where you have, you know, the tie clip and the hairpins. These are multiple ancestors that you're honoring.
Yeah.
I think that it's all a matter of choice on whether you want to have your picture with the person that you love. Some people really want that because it helps them to remember the relationship they had.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way to do it when it comes to your own personal altars.
Yeah, well, I got lucky because I got things on both sides of the family.
Yeah.
So nobody's left out. And aunts and uncles and stuff. So everybody's happy. Otherwise, somebody's going to smack me up the head if I...
There you go. There you go. You're getting the reminders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, I'm going to jump into another question. I've been hearing people say that once you cross over, we don't think that we're living in the same consciousness. So we don't really care much what comes on down to earth. And we revert to a spiritual selves. I'm not sure that's true. What do you think?
Well, I think that when we die, we become all that we are. So I think we do become our higher self, which I believe that we're multiple, that I personally believe more in parallel lives than past lives. And, you know, I think that when we are in a physical form, we are in linear time in which we're four before we're 40. When we are outside of physical form, I think it's more like how quantum physics thinks about it, about these multiple things happening at once or simultaneously. So when we die, we are connected to all that we are, all of those incarnations of self. And we have this, you know, bigger, you know, consciousness. But I think that we also, many of us, not all of us, but many of us do still have a really strong connection to our lives. And usually that is, you know, for as long as we're needed or as long as we need to be there, you know, like mm-hmm. how do we need to be watching? My great grandmother, who died when I was 12, is still very much an active spirit. Not as much as she was, you know, at other points, but she's still a very, you know, she's still doing stuff. She's still connected, even though she's been dead for, you know, 40 years. So I think it really is a something that, you know, it's more complex.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to talk about the veil between the worlds, because you said something really good in the book that I didn't give any thought to. But, you know, some people think that the veil only thins around Samhain and Halloween. Personally, I think it's accessible whenever you want to. When people cross the veil, and this is what you wrote, this is the interesting part, they create a power surge, which allows more energy to be utilized, making them more tangible in the world of the living and honest, and allows them to reach out and say goodbye to us once they're, you know, on their way out. That's kind of interesting. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think that, well, first of all, for spirits to communicate, they need an energy source. Mm-hmm. So the energy source is usually either through the earth, through ley lines. So you'll have more spirit activity at places where there's vortexes and notable, like places where there's stone circles, places where there's notable energetic lines crossing. And anybody who understands dowsing or geomancy or wants to look up those subjects, and you can find out more about ley lines.
Mm-hmm.
But the other source is a medium. So if you have a house that is haunted and nobody living in the house has any natural ability as a medium, then nothing is going to happen. But if you move one person into the house who's a medium, then everybody can have an experience with spirit because the medium is the battery.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing happens when we die. When we die, our life force that we're letting go of is that battery, you know, surge, or that energy surge that makes it so know, because most people, when they talk about having experiences with their beloved dead, the majority of the time it happens shortly after the person has died, when they're still in that newly dead stage. And they are more attached to the physical world. And they're also, you know, they have this ability to utilize that energy that is still connected to the physical.
So they realize that then. Because, you know, you also hear about people, once they're crossing over, they get lost. They're confused. They don't know what's going on, kind of thing.
There are those people, yes. That doesn't happen as often as Hollywood and stories would like us to imagine. You know, I think it does happen more often if there is a, you know, maybe a mental illness at the or mental distress at the time of passing. Mm-hmm. That can cause it more because there can be some confusion. But generally, a spirit that is connected to that spirit, you know, one of their family or tribe is going to come and collect them. So, you know, the spirits that say haunted or in that distressed place really are not the average person. That's actually very, like I said, it's much more sensationalized by, you know, making it a good story for the media.
Yeah, well, there's always one of those like floating around somewhere.
Yes, exactly.
All right, right before we're going to take a break in a couple of minutes, but I want to ask you, what is wide-angle vision, and can anyone do it?
Yes, anybody can do it. And so wide-angle vision is utilizing your peripheral vision. And anybody who has ever been hunting before uses this naturally, because when you are using your forward facing vision, you know, the prey that you are hunting is going to feel you. So you have to learn to look out of the corners of your eyes. We all know this from having the feeling of somebody watching us across the room. We feel that because they're staring at us with their forward facing eyes. So if you're really trying to watch somebody without them feeling you, you look out of the corner of your eyes. Well, the same thing is how we approach wide angle vision. You can look at it like if you've ever done those, the art in the 90s where you look at one picture, the magic eye pictures or something, where you look at a picture and then another one pops out of it, like three-dimensionally.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same kind of vision where you're kind of looking down your nose and making your eyes, you know, you're paying attention to that peripheral. You're not getting as much, it's almost like a little fuzzier because you're not getting as much, you know, deep, you know, personal like details that way. But what happens is that with spirit, we often, because it's like another dimension is a good way of looking at it, we often look through it. And so when we're trying to pursue, that's why we see things most often. People will say, I saw something out of the corner of my eye and I turned to look and it was gone. It's like, well, that's because you turned to look and you look directly through it because you're using the wrong vision.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. Because, yeah, I mean, when we're seeing it and saying, like you said, ooh, we saw this white thing pass us on the side of our eyes. So we're doing it.
Yes. So all of us do it naturally, you know, but the thing that we want to do is we want to develop the ability to resist turning to look when we do have those moments. And if we learn, like anybody who does yoga also has learned how to use a dristi or a focal point. You're softening your vision when you do that. That's kind of the same thing. And so there's a lot of ways of doing it, but just try it. You can do this. It's about really focusing on the peripheral. I find that if I'm looking for spirits around a person, that I will look just above their head, because this makes me put my focus. I'm not looking on their eyes to get distracted by them. And I put my focus above their head and wide. So my dristi is the point just above their head. And then from that point, I soften my vision to be able to look out through at that wider vision.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. So everybody stay put and we'll be back in a minute or two.
Cauldron will be right back, so don't go away. If you end up with webbed feet, remember, you've been warned.
As you go about your daily life, look closer. Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth 50 years strong. Every youth who walks into Covenant House gets clean clothes, hot meals, medical care, and a safe place to sleep. So look closer at Covenant House and help us fight youth homelessness. To help or get help, go to covenanthouse.org.
Are you haunted by shadow people in the middle of the night?
Do you secretly love all things creepy and spooky, enjoying ghost stories and horror fiction from the best storytellers?
Do you have a true ghost experience you want to share, but no one will believe you?
If yes, listen to the professionals on What Are You Afraid of? Horror Paranormal Show, Friday nights at 9 p.m. on ParaX Radio and at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com.
What are you afraid of on ParaX?
Our creepy and demented hosts are on call to provide you with all your spooky needs with true ghost stories, interviews, indie music, and new horror fiction.
We are ready to scare you.
ParaX.
Missed an episode of Stirring the Cauldron? Then be sure to check out MarlaBrooks.com and check out the archive. And while you're there, check out Marla's weekly Witches Oracle card reading. Explore the site to find many great resources, such as information on tarot, oracle readings, metaphysical consultations, and links to all of Marla's books. That's MarlaBrooks.com. Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And my guest tonight is Sally Crowe, and we're talking about her new book, Spirit Speaker. And I'm going to jump right back in because it always seems like the last half hour of the show goes faster than the first half hour, which goes pretty quick, too. Okay, in the chapter talking about sitting with death, you speak about a place called the gray. What is the gray?
So the gray is a term that Spirit gave to me to refer to that space in which we are actively dying, that we can't get better. And it's also sometimes people are in that when they are in that confused state where you said we're talking about earlier, when they cross over and they haven't quite adjusted to being dead yet, they could still be in the gray. But the gray is that stage. I think of it a lot like the other opposite end of the circle from pregnancy. You know, when a person is pregnant and their belly grows, the family and the community realizes that a new person is about to be born and allows them to kind of come close for that experience, if you will. And when we are dying, it is the same thing. You know, we start to show more in the spirit world. So mediums also enter that space quite regularly. So they're, you know, people who more spirit activity happens around. It is a space where when somebody is in the gray, your loved one might be experiencing, if they're someone you know is dying, they might start talking more about loved ones they have that have crossed over, talking about them as they've seen them in the room with them, and they really have, because it's also the people who take care of people who are actively dying, who are in the gray, are also more likely to have spirit experiences during that time, because that person who is dying, you know, becomes more open and in many ways more of a conduit, like a medium.
Okay. So, you know, somebody would think that maybe the gray was limbo or something, but it kind of is,
but it's not the limbo of after being passed over. It's more that limbo of dying. You know, when a spirit tells me that somebody who's living is in the gray, it usually means that they have about a year to live. If they have less than that, the spirit who I'm talking to will usually say, you know, give me an idea of what they think. Now, this does not mean that all spirits are psychic. What it means is that just like we can say, well, they look like they're 6 months pregnant, so I'd say they got a couple more months left. You know, mm-hmm. It's the same kind of concept. They're able to judge it sometimes people go beyond the year marker, but if they do, it's usually because they're afraid of dying, and it's not usually easy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think everybody is afraid of it, but some people, well, there are people that are ready to go. You know, that's not rare. You know, you get to a certain age or you get to a certain place in your life and you're ready to go. And so I like that too. And, it's mostly people, they want to see their families that are mm-hmm. on the other side. They want to talk to God, depending on, right. you know, the religion.
They're tired.
And
a lot of reasons. And I also think that not everybody is afraid of dying. I think that modern culture has made us afraid of dying because we've taken death and we've made it this foreign thing. You know, it happens behind closed doors. And to be quite honest, I think that we're people who are spiritually starving, you know, mm-hmm. that we no longer follow mass religions, at least not the majority of us. That's really losing its popularity. And that is good in some ways, but in the other ways, there's a lot of people who, because they didn't have like an assigned religion at birth, they don't know where to start. They don't know how to have a spiritual connection. And so they don't have any understanding of life or death put into a framework for them. And so there's pros and cons to that. I think it's the fear comes out of that.
Well, yeah. And the other fear, I think, is it's not dying. It's how we're dying and when. That, I think, is the scariest part of all, isn't it?
It is. I've been telling people that, you know, there's ways that we can educate ourselves, that we can become more comfortable with what death could look like for us, or to even be really active in our dying, you know, so consciously entering into our death. There's a lot of programs out there now for death doulas. I recommend StardustMeadows.com, which is out of Vermont, but they do a 13-week death doula program. And I'm a speaker at the end of the program in the last week. So they actually approach it from a spiritual level as well. Mm-hmm. But it's all about helping people maybe to get over some of that fear, either of the loved one dying or of them dying. It's, you know, I think a lot of this is that we have to, if we build a relationship with our beloved dead, a lot of the fear is taken away from us. And yes, nobody wants to suffer at the end of life. And, you know, there are people who come to their death with a lot of hardship. Mm-hmm. But when we're comfortable with it, it makes it so that, you know, I've communicated with spirits who were well adjusted even when they had really terrible deaths, and it's because in some part of themselves they had already like accepted that was part of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry. We were just talking a little bit a while ago about a greeter. Somebody's always going to be there to greet you on the other side. but you've assisted many people who were on their deathbed.
Yes.
Is it always somebody that we know? And if it is, how do they know we're coming?
Well, again, they know we're coming because of that gray. We start showing up more to our spirits. And usually there is a, you know, matriarch or patriarch of a family that is going to greet us, as well as, you know, if your husband died before you, then they'd probably be there. Children that die before you will probably be there. But there's usually also like a family member who that's kind of their job. So, you know, even if you're a person who, you know, is afraid to die because you feel like you've had a really lonely life, or maybe you don't think that somebody's going to be there for you, somebody is. It might be a great grandmother who you never knew, but still cares about all of the souls that are part of their family and tribe. But there will be somebody who is there to greet you and to help you adjust, even when you go to your grave with a lot of regrets. You know, mm-hmm. you're not beyond having somebody help you to look at that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was somebody I knew a long time ago who despised his mother. And he kept saying, you know, when I die, I never want to see that woman. Ever, ever, ever. But it isn't up to him who shows up, is he? Is it?
Well, you're not going to be greeted by somebody who abused you. You know, you might at some point have contact with that spirit, but that's not going to be who comes to greet you. You know, there's going to be some, it's going to be more of a greeting that is there some comfort in it. And you do have, there are spirits who don't want to have to be connected to each other after death. Mm. There is, we still have free will. We still have the ability, but our emotions get turned down when we die. So we're able to rationalize things easier. You know, I like to talk about that a lot because if we imagine our emotions on a volume dial, you know, that's, you know, on a stereo 0 to 10, that most people go through life with their emotions set at about a 3 or 4. Mm. And that, when somebody has like mental illness, depression, anxiety, addiction, that their emotions can be as high as like an 8 or a 9. When we die, our emotions are turned down to be about a 2, which okay. means that we are more able to process through things in our life, even when they're hard, because it becomes more like watching something on television. You know, you still have an emotional response to watching something sad or painful or violent on television, but you don't have the same experience you do as if you are in it. And when we have that volume dial set at like an 8 or a 9, it's like we're in our memories. And, you know, most people who have even done bad things, if we look back through the story, there is trauma in their past. There is something. Very few people just come in who are really broken and evil, if you will. Mm-hmm. Most people who do bad things have a story that involves bad things being done to them. So they're put into time out where they have to, you know, process through these things. And they might have to stay there longer if they have, you know, a harder story. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not punishment, and we're not going to have our abusers be the ones that come and greet us.
Good. All right. So what are energetic locks?
So there are places in our body that we hold tension. They're usually places like our joints, you know, our ankles, our wrist, our pelvis. Anybody who's had an out-of-body experience, like some people might have had an experience of feeling like they were floating out of their body, but they didn't get very high, or they felt like they were stuck at their hips, okay? Like, that's because your hips are a place that we get stuck because there's so much a part of our life, from sitting to childbearing to sex. This is, you know, it's a part of showing us that we're physically connected to this body. Our wrist and our hands are a place like that because, you know, how much of what we do in life is really dependent on our hands. And our ankles, you know, there are these places that when somebody is dying, they can be stuck in that space. Like, so both my sister and I have worked with death in a lot of different ways. She does a lot of like funerals, and she's helped people in that crossing process in the longer term. Like when my dad was dying, she was doing guided meditation with him every day. He knew that he was dying, and she was helping him to prepare for dying by helping him to have to do journey work or have out-of-body experiences where he could have more of a connection to his spirit and see that separation between the physical and the soul, which made it easier for him when he came to the point of dying, because those locks would have been released because you're not getting stuck in the physical body. But if somebody is you know, really struggling to die, one of the things that people can do is that they can do some exercises that I talk about in the book Spirit Speaker that involve circular motions that do help to start loosening up those locks and making it a little easier for the person to let go of their body.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about earthbound spirits, because there's lots of reasons why people don't or don't want to cross. But is it detrimental to the spirit that refuses to go?
I don't think so. I have I think that if a spirit is stuck in a, there's two different things. First of all, I think the spirits and ghosts are separate. Mm-hmm. Ghost doesn't really know they're dead. And when they're attached to a place, they're also usually attached to a moment. And so that means that they're probably in a painful place that keeps repeating. And in that case, I feel like it is detrimental to that spirit soul. That's why I tell people, like, I'm not the kind of medium who you'd ever see doing a haunted house tour. And not because I'm judging those people, but because I'm a healer and I would be thinking those souls need to be crossed over. They're in pain. Okay. Mm-hmm. A spirit knows they're dead, but they may still choose to hang out at a certain place because they're more, like you said, an earthbound spirit. They might feel like they don't want to let go yet. They want to stay in a particular place. And they don't have to have died in that place to stay in that place. It could just be a place that they went regularly. I have so many weird thoughts, though, because I also have been in places. There's a bagel shop in the local town, the town that my office is in St. Johnsburg. It used to be a bagel shop, and they had a spirit that was in the building. It used to be an old creamery, and it was an old man, and he was the custodian there. And I want to say that I think that was more of like a time loop space, because he could hear them. What people usually experienced from him was they'd be in the back bathroom or something and they'd make a noise themselves. And then they would hear someone say, hello, you know, like he was responding to them thinking, oh my God, I just heard something. So they called me and I did a spirit gallery there, and he was the janitor. And so there's so many different ways that spirits can be attached. I mean, I think that goes back to the thing that we have to think about time and space differently when we're dead, that there's not just this black and white. There's so many ways that spirits activity can be happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, again, there's so many reasons that people might not want to. I mean, you know, religious people think they were maybe bad in this lifetime. They're going to hell, so they're not going anywhere.
Right.
You know, and I hope
for the rapture, you know, that their soul believed that was what was going to happen, that they would stay, you know, earthbound until they were called up by God. You know, there's also, like, I think that when we look at, like, for example, like a battleground, I don't believe that all those souls are stuck there. Like when people see all those orbs there, mm-hmm. I think that's more of one of those memory loops. Like, I don't think that hundreds of people's souls are stuck on the, you know, the fields of Gettysburg. I think the land itself is scarred and it creates a memory loop, which means that, yes, we're experiencing the spirits there, but those souls aren't stuck there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, they have free will. Everybody does, right? They can move if they want to, I guess. There's the age-old question that I hear people ask. Will we be able to see our loved ones when we cross over? And, yeah, well, you already answered the other part about not being seeing people that they don't like. But, you know, there are people that, you know, are kind of worried that they won't see their families, their loved ones and stuff.
I think that we all will be reconnected. I believe that my form of reincarnation that I have experienced with the dead is one that, you know, the Celtic people have a tendency to describe reincarnation, that we connect with our soul families. And what that means is that when we die, we kind of pool up over there and wait for the people who are important for us to cross before we start crossing back over again. So instead of thinking that we have a soulmate, we actually have soulmates. That's why we have so many friends and stuff that come into our lives who we go feel like, oh my God, I feel like I've known you forever. It's like, yeah, mm-hmm. because you have. And that soul family is not always, you know, it's more like a tribe or a clan than it is a family, because mm-hmm. it's not like it's all biological relatives, but it's saying that we do wait for the people that are important for us. We want to have that reconnection before we, you know, choose different ways to come back into each other's lives. We don't always come back as I'm always your mother and you're always my child. You know, sometimes you're my parent, or sometimes we're friends, or sometimes we're lovers. We are playing out this game in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was talking to a friend one time, and they were wondering, you know, because they were a really close-knit family, and they said when they go over to the other side, they want to hug their loved ones.
Yeah.
Is there such a thing as a hug? Or
I think so. I definitely think so. I think that it may be a feeling that's different, but it's definitely that connection. And I've had experiences where I have felt my beloved dead, both my father and my grandmother, hug me when I was doing spirit work, where I was, you know, doing journey work. And that hasn't happened very often, where it felt like a tangible thing. And this mm-hmm. felt like a tangible thing. And I have no doubt that when we are in spirit form, that we are able to have that feeling of contact with one another. But mm-hmm. think different. We can connect with each other in a much more deep way. I mean, we can share our energy much easier when we're dead.
Okay, it's helpful, you know, because some people just think that there are limits, but there are probably more limits down here than there are up there.
I think so.
Yeah. All right. We've just got like 4 or 5 minutes, and I was nosing around your website, and I saw something about the Sally Crowe School of Magic.
Yeah.
And so in our remaining moments, I think I'd like to hear a little bit about it.
Okay, so it's actually being taken down temporarily because mm-hmm. I started during the pandemic, but I just opened up so it's being refreshed. I started a new business in St. Johnsbury, Vermont, that is called The Pearl, and it is Sally Crowe's Psychic Artisans Guild and Educational Center. So Sally Crowe School of Magic is being rebirthed or rebranded, and you know, mostly because I had limited technology and my videos were, you know, not the highest quality because it was a pandemic, and I'm a great speaker, but I'm not the tech person. Okay.
Yeah.
But I teach a ton of classes, and both in person and online. Right now, the thing that I have coming up is I am teaching both online and in person a class on working with elemental earth. That's what I have coming up this month. And you can find that by going to my website. And like I said, the School of Magic is being rebirthed. So it's probably going to be closer to the end of the year before it's got a new website and everything, because I've learned that not everybody works at the same squirrel speed as me. So when you're waiting on other pieces to be put in place, you have to be a little patient. But there are still plenty of opportunities for people to learn with me. The School of Magic, though, is mostly recorded information, so people can learn at their own pace. And that will be available again. It's just I have to do a bunch of shuffling at the moment.
So with your new venture, how often do you change this subject, what you're teaching? A monthly, weekly?
I'm not the only teacher. I have apprentices who teach classes. I just got done teaching a 5-part series on moon magic. I teach right now. I do a monthly offering on working with a different element. So we did air last month, and this month we're doing earth. For the people who are doing it online, I do it through Zoom. And And then I will be doing one element per month coming up. But I'm also teaching a spirit communication class. Right now, there's so much happening. And I'm just telling people to be patient, because everything's getting, well, you know, when you kind of like are rebranding, I'm separating out my educational piece because I'm bringing other people into it from just my psychic readings, which is a different part of my services. It's just me.
You've got a lot of services there.
I'm a busy gal.
Yes, you are. And you have a website that can keep people busy for a while if they go over there. So where is it?
It's sallycrow.com, SalliCrow.com. Yeah, I have a lot going on there. You can find, I have been a blogger forever, so there's lots of free information on my page. I have all sorts of different offerings. I do psychic readings, spirit communication, past life readings, intuitive healing work. I teach, and I have, and the links will be going up for this soon, because like I said, everything's like been getting updates, but I also am involved in a jewelry line. I have an elemental magic jewelry line created by Alex Lozier Jewelry. And we're working on a second one to go with the spirit speaker. So really good, cool talisman, strongly infused magic item. So yes, I am I have a very creative mind.
And when do you sleep?
I sleep very easily, actually. That's one of the benefits I have. I'm the type of person who when I close my eyes, I fall asleep. And
wow,
I'm lucky in that way. But I probably sleep like 5 or 6 hours a night. I just have always been this way. I tell people that my dark totem or my dark spirit animal is a squirrel on crack.
That works.
It does, except for, you know, when I start getting squirrely, I have the people in my life going like, okay, Sally, that's too many projects. Slow down.
Yeah. Well, at least you have that, you know.
I do.
Yeah. Very good. All right. Well, thank you for your wisdom tonight and sharing the book. And hopefully, you know, you'll come back again sometime down the line.
All right. Well, thank you. I realized this was my second chat with you, and I think that's great. So have a great night, Marla.
You too. And thank you all for listening in as well. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2024. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompetech.com.